Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg, presented by Clear. Enroll today at clearme.com/Peter and try Clear at the busiest airports nationwide.
Hi there, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, we'll look at international travel in the era of COVID, confusing regulations and restrictions, and then, to make matters more complicated, the real mess in getting a new or renewed U.S. passport. And then, if you find yourself stuck in America this summer, don't despair. We'll have the latest results in the Best Places to Live annual report, with some surprises. First up,
if you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.
While the rest of Europe is open to vaccinated Americans, that's not the case in the United Kingdom. I check in with senior travel editor for The Independent in London, Simon Calder. Greece was one of the first countries in the European Union to open up, especially to Americans, not just to passengers coming by air, but passengers coming by ship. And they continue to stay open. And of course, their numbers reflect that. Not the same case in the United Kingdom and other parts of that region. And joining me now to give us the latest update, because this week got crazy already. It was supposed to be Freedom Day earlier in the week in the United Kingdom, is our good pal from the Independent, the senior travel editor of the Independent, Simon Calder. How are you, Simon?
Peter, I just wish I was with you in beautiful Athens, staying at the Grand Britannia. It's just the location, the atmosphere. You're right in the middle of everything. I envy you, but I hope I will see you there sometime soon. And I hope that we will be able to go there without too much hassle. Yeah. What you need to know as an American tourist, and I'm assuming that you probably flew over the United Kingdom on the way, at the moment, you, Peter, and your lovely listeners, even if they have been fully vaccinated and they've got their certificates to prove it, they are not invited unless they are going to go straight into a hotel and self-isolate for 10 days. The UK government, which has been very, very different over this whole pandemic in terms of what it's done, we were opening up just as everybody else was closing down in March 2020. They've just decided we don't need Americans coming here. I've been around to the four nations of the United Kingdom, so England, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and the hoteliers, the golf courses, they are just desperate to see Americans back, but nobody can come in. However, this week, I'm pleased to say there is a workaround, and it's just as easy as pie. If you've been double vaccinated, or you've got you finished a single dose vaccine, waited a week or two, then you can go to Ireland, the Republic, Southern Ireland, and just spend 10 days there. Once you've completed 10 days there, you can go across the border to Northern Ireland. You can go to the UK, to Great Britain, which is, of course, and there's going to be a test at the end, England, Wales and Scotland, and you will be able to enjoy our lovely part of the world. But it is just desperate. And of course, the rules are changing.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. Everything we're talking about today is subject to immediate change. And of course, the one other word that we haven't talked about yet, but we need to, it's the elephant in the room, it's reciprocity. And that is, the United States still does not allow vaccinated Europeans into the U.S. There had been rumors, in fact, President Biden even hinted at it, that the U.S. would announce that policy sometime in the next couple of days. It hasn't happened. In fact, the U.S. State Department went one step further because of the increase in cases in the U.K. Earlier in the week, they issued a level 4 do not travel advisory for Americans going to the U.K. Now, I should add that for those of you who are enlightened travelers, you know that it's just an advisory. It's not a rule. It's not a law. You're not going to get arrested if you go. It's just saying do not travel as a strong advisory. That doesn't make matters any easier, though, does it?
It certainly doesn't. I mean, when you are told by your government, we really think, yeah, there's maybe 12 or 20 really dangerous countries in the world. And by the way, the United Kingdom is one of them. It's not a great, great look. Now, clearly, I've been here for pretty much all of the terrible pandemic. Funnily enough, probably my greatest trip was actually escaping last October, when we still could, and going to Greece. I traveled all the way down from beautiful Corfu, lovely island off the Ionian coast, through the Peloponnese, Corinth, and along the Corinth Canal, then down to the islands in the Saronic Gulf, and then finally and triumphantly coming back to Athens, which I don't know. Peter, can I perhaps embarrass you and say, were you in Athens in round about the kind of 1980s? I know that you're a young and sprightly fellow.
and the answer is yes.
Yeah, okay. And it was pretty horrible, but they did great in the Olympics, and they turned it into a really livable city from, you know, effectively just one huge traffic jam. So they've done great stuff there. And I know people who have just said, we're going to go to Greece. We don't care. We're going to find somewhere to stay. Yeah, the rules will come and go, but we just love the pace of life here. It's one of those things I sort of wish I had done.
And keep in mind, Simon, as of, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, Greece was still in a lockdown, but they still were welcoming Americans, meaning that you may not go out to dinner every night, and you may not be able to, venture to a museum. But now, you know, the same thing happened when I was in Turkey, right? No problem going, but you couldn't go out to dinner. Now that's changing. Let's see how long it lasts, because we're on a roller coaster here. And since there is no vaccine passport, since every country is operating as its own single entity and nobody's really talking to each other, it creates another problem. Because Americans, and I say this because it's the way that travel was structured for so many people, Americans don't like to go to one-dimensional destinations. They like to package them. They want to go to Greece, and then they want to go to Turkey, or they want to go to, you know, they want to go to Scotland, and they want to go to Wales. Exactly. So it does impact your ability to travel between the countries, but right now, you're not really impacted in traveling to them. And let me ask one other question here, Simon, and please feel free to disagree with me, but I really do believe that the metrics have morphed from the focus on the vaccination levels of the country itself that you want to go to the vaccination levels of the people who want to go to that country. And that's one of the reasons why I think the EU opened the door, because they didn't want to be left out of another summer of revenue.
Sure. I mean, it's public health against national wealth, and there has to be a balance. And the UK has basically just said, we don't care about our tourism industry. We don't care about the fantastic castle hotels in Scotland. We don't care about Stratford-on-Avon and its history. You know, effectively, it's easier for us just to keep the Americans out. And then when we're good and ready, we'll ask them if they want to come back. And they may well say, actually, we went to Greece and we had a fantastic time there. And so we're going back there. It is a very, very tricky business. But I mean, you flew nonstop, didn't you? Which I think
I did.
Just go, going back to what you were saying about combining destinations, I know that's absolutely fantastic. And there is talk that getting around the European Union, which of course the UK left a year or so ago, is relatively smooth, but generally only if you've got this EU digital COVID pass. So my, you know, I love catching trains across Europe. It's a wonderful way to see the continent. But at the moment, I'm just saying, just go from A to B, have a lovely time, and come back again. It's just not worth the every time you try to cross a border, you are multiplying the possible problems.
And what is it doing to the airlines? Because the airlines can't come back if there's no transatlantic flights in both directions.
Yeah, it's so interesting watching what's happening. So intercontinental Europe, there's a lot of aviation going on. Into the UK, there's very little. Bear in mind that London, New York used to be the richest intercontinental air route in the world. Now, you, on a typical day, you might get three flights on it instead of 30 or 40. The airlines are really hurting in the UK and indeed in Ireland, because the travel restrictions are that much tougher. And in Europe, yeah, we're back to kind of 40, 50, 60% of normal activities. In the UK, we're down to about 15 to 20%. It's horrible. Earlier this week, we heard that EasyJet, Britain's biggest low-cost airline, in the 3 months from April to June, they lost $55 per second. That was just gone. That was what it cost them to keep the airline in kind of fit condition for the restart, and nobody knows when that is coming.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because in the U.S., the rebound is being led by the low-cost carriers and the leisure market. I mean, you can't get a seat.
It's absolutely fantastic what's happening there. I'm really, really enjoying the excitement that I'm seeing of people getting to know their own country, which is absolutely terrific. And of course, given that the US is so big and so diverse, if you're in Anchorage, Alaska, then California is effectively a completely different country. If you're in Texas, then the state of Maine, you know, might as well be on the moon. It's wonderful. And therefore, because there are so many opportunities, so much diversity, U.S. tourist industry isn't hurting as much as it might be.
Are we going back to pre-pandemic bad behavior on the part of the travel providers? We've seen in the last, just 2 weeks, the government of Italy banning cruise ships from the canals in Venice. We've seen the mayor of Maui in Hawaii do the absolute unthinkable, begging the airlines to reduce the number of their flights to his island. I mean, because they literally can't handle the numbers. Think about what that means. I mean, most mayors, their mandate is to get more flights. Their mandate is to get more visitors. Where are we now? Well, you know, I remember before the pandemic, and Simon, I'm sure you even reported about this, there was even a consideration in Venice to put turnstiles in St. Mark's Square.
Oh, there certainly was. And look, I think that it's really interesting, the development in Venice for cruise ships, which is basically just saying, yep, you're going to be sailing from a place, I think 90 minutes by road. It's a lovely place, Monfalcone, and really worth exploring, but you're not going to be able to explore because you're going to be getting straight onto your ship there. Venice itself, I think, is probably going to reach the conclusion that actually, yes, since we are completely tourism dependent, we will welcome people in. We won't put the turnstiles in. Maui is a different one. And that is just shows you what happens when there is so much demand for something exotic. And while I love every aspect of the US, Hawaii and its islands are arguably, you know, the most foreign place you can go. And so it doesn't sort of quite surprise me. We've seen similar things actually elsewhere in Europe, particularly in the Scottish Islands, basically just saying, oh, we'd love to see you, but not just yet. It's a tricky one, and it's particularly island communities where they feel that they are vulnerable. And once they open up to the rest of the world, that will cause them problems.
Of course, using Hawaii as a model, or even Venice, because some people might just argue that Venice, in its essence, is a fabrication. There are very few Venetians who actually are Venetian. But forgetting that, and by the way, I love Venice, but forgetting that, it's a double-edged sword when you consider the fact that, you know, these are tourism-based economies. In many cases, if you look at the World Travel and Tourism Council average, the global average, it's about 11% of global GDP is travel and tourism. Well, that is definitely not the case in Hawaii. That is definitely not the case in Venice. It's high double digits. And so the double-edged sword is the very people you need to come are the very people who could destroy you.
Yes, but it all depends how your vaccine program is going. I mean, nobody can pretend when they are talking about opening up tourism that it is risk-free. It will come with risks. It will come with more infections. I mean, of course, aviation was what was responsible for spreading this terrible virus around the world so quickly. So there is not a cost-free option, but you have to, and particularly with the vaccination program now in the US doing pretty well, you have to say, well, at some stage we have to accept that the most vulnerable people we hope are now vaccinated, and therefore we can let people in. And yeah, infections will rise, but jobs will be created by these people coming in. And to, I think, any country which says, yeah, you're very welcome, but not yet, is really taking a risk, because there are many great places, as you always report, around the world, and people might just say, okay, Scotland, no, we'll find somewhere else, maybe the beautiful west of Ireland. Maui, okay, well, we'll head down to Cabo in Baja California. You know, there's always options, and just to say, we'll let you know when we're ready, I think it feels a bit sort of arrogant to me, and I'm not sure if people will pay much attention to it.
Well, let's go beyond that. Let's take vaccinations off the table. Let's take, hopefully, COVID off the table. Remember, what was our buzzword back in January and February of 2020? It was over tourism, right? So we're back to that again when you talk about Venice, right? Where the bridge of sighs is the bridge of thighs, where, you know, you have, that was my line. I like it a lot. I use it all the time. But the thing is, how do you take the time that we've had during the pandemic to actually do some intelligent strategizing so that you don't repeat the mistakes of the past?
Well, you will know what the answer is, because I've heard you speak on tourism very, very fluently. And the answer is that you persuade Americans, yeah, Venice is great and everyone needs to see it once in their lifetime. But while you're in this amazing part of the world, go to Verona, go to Ravenna, head around the coast to Trieste. So much to see. And there's always just so much diversity and joy to be found. And frankly, I mean, I do recall, you know, being caught up on a Saturday when the cruise ships are in town in Dubrovnik or Barcelona or Venice. And you just think, I can do without this. I'll come back in November when I'm the only tourist in town and people are glad to see me. And so I kind of think that it's a little bit self-correcting. People will go there and they'll just think, I didn't have a great experience. I'll look around a bit further and maybe I'll come back off season. And off-season tourism is just a joy.
I couldn't agree with you more. I live for the off-season. I think that the off-season started with a bunch of escaped garmentos in New York who were freezing their you-know-whats off in February and said, let's go to the Caribbean. The Caribbean in the summer is just as nice. So the bottom line is, it's a great opportunity now as we re-emerge, or emerge, depending on your history, from COVID-19, to really embrace the off-season as we move forward. It's a great strategy, it's an affordable strategy, and it's an experiential one-upsmanship that you're going to get if you do that. My thanks to Simon. Let's just say the UK suddenly did open up to vaccinated travelers. If you applied for a new or renewal passport in the last 4 months, chances are good you're still waiting, and you won't be able to go there or anywhere else for that matter. There's a huge backlog at the 26 US passport agencies all across America. It is, to say the least, a mess. David Alwadish of It's Easy, who's my passport expert, weighs in on the problem.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
A lot of people have been writing me complaining about their inability to either get a new passport or renew an existing one. We've had this problem in years past, but it was due to, you know, overwhelming demand during, you know, peak summer months. This is all pandemic related. The passport offices are not being staffed. People are, you know, it's one thing to say you're working from home if you're in the advertising business, but if you're in the passport renewal business for a State Department passport office, you got to be in the office because that's how things get renewed. It's like saying you're a banker with cash, but you're working remotely. Well, that's not easy to do. And so what we're seeing, and this is getting crazier, is that for people who would want to apply for a new or renewal passport, if they wanted expedited service in the old days, you know, you might get it in 1 or 2 weeks. In the days that we're talking about now, expedited service could be anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. And if regular service is being asked for, we could be talking 5 to 6 months. It's intolerable. And for people listening to the show, you know, you've got your calendars out. There goes your summer. And for many of you, it may even be your fall. So joining me now is someone who knows a little bit about this. And in the interest of full disclosure, he has saved me time and time again when I need a visa or when I need a passport because of my travel schedule. He's the owner of It's Easy right here in New York, and his name is David Alwadish. How are you, David?
Peter, how are you, my dear friend?
I'm okay, but a lot of people out there are in trouble because they're being denied the opportunity to travel because they literally cannot get a passport.
Peter, I listened to you, and you're phenomenal. I couldn't correct one thing that you said. I have been doing this thing for a very long time, close to 40 years. I don't want to date myself because I'm still young at heart, but the truth of the matter is I have never, never, never seen anything like this ever. It's almost brings tears to my eyes because I see people crying to me every day about trips they can't make, deaths in the family that they can't see, people they can't bury. And I don't understand. They go upstairs to the passport agency. There's one person working at a window and 100 people downstairs. It doesn't make any sense. And I was laughing because I was going to say on a radio show, Peter, I'm almost speechless, but I'm not going to be speechless for you, Peter. I'm going to try to help you and your listeners out as best I can.
Well, let's talk about this because in normal times, you are an independent passport expediter. You can get people passports, you can get them visas, and sometimes those visas can be difficult to get to certain countries. I know this, having done this before so many times with you, but we're really talking today about just basic passport issuing and passport renewal. So let's go back a couple of years, let's go back 3 years, and if somebody came to you and said, David, can you know, how do I apply for a passport, what do I do, you would basically have them fill out the application, and then you would handle the paperwork and actually the physical going to the office to get that passport to be physically in their hands in a reasonable amount of time. Suffice to say that's correct?
That's very correct. The services that I used to offer, where I used to go in, one person would go in, drop off a stack of work, and then go back a day or two or three later, depending upon the service that the passport agency was offering, and pick up the finished product. They've suspended that service since March 19th. I'm bewildered by why they have done that, because it's a COVID-safe service. Imagine that I could walk in with a dozen applications, one person, drop it off in their mailbox, so to speak, and their Dropbox, and then they work on it, and we go back and pick it up. But that's what I used to do for people. It was effortless. They come to my office, they drop it off, they leave, and they're happy. And it was really unlimited that we could pretty much get them done.
But now, for people who are either going online, which is somewhat suicidal, or even trying to get people on the phone, what they're hearing is there are no appointments. You can't just walk in. If you stand in line, there's no guarantee that they're even going to see you. Is there any alternative for anybody who absolutely needs a passport to get it in a reasonable amount of time?
You know something, I am trying my best, and I say it honestly, to help people make the appointments. I want to be very clear. I don't sell them an appointment. I don't have any. They come to me, they say I'm traveling, but if they're not traveling within the guidelines, it's tough to get, because most of the appointments are issued 2 weeks in advance. And each day they release another day. And those appointments, the reason why people can't get them is because they're gone like the movie, gone in 60 seconds. Maybe not gone in 60 seconds, but I can assure you that if they try calling when these appointments are released, they're gone in about 2-3 minutes.
I've heard stories, David, about people living in California who could not get appointments, who literally were traveling across the country to go to offices like in Vermont or New Hampshire, where they found an open invitation. So they were flying across just to sneak in there for 40 minutes to get a passport. And that's assuming they let them in the door.
That's right. If they will not let the guards outside of every one of these agencies, in a funny sort of way, I wish I had every one of my employees so respectful to my rules and regulations, but the rules and regulations are daunting. The guards will not let anybody in. They could care less. They've heard every story in the book, and they just could care less. They're not paid to it. They've drunk enough Kool-Aid to understand that they cannot let you in without an absolute confirmation number for that day and time. And people are outside thinking that it was the good old days where they could just wait online and maybe they'll let a few in at a time, but that's not happening at all.
So what I'm hearing from you, and tell me if I'm wrong here, is that anybody listening to this program who's flying in the next month may not be flying in the next month. And if you want to fly in the next 6 months, you better apply for the passport now.
That's right. The people, well, let's make it more even precise. If they're traveling within the next week to 10 days, boy, getting an appointment, they'd have to hope they get a cancellation. I believe that my gut feeling is the Department of State does sprinkle a few teasers of appointments each day for, to get a few other people who are desperate. But basically, the appointments, again, are launched 2 weeks out. So if you're traveling 3 weeks out, you got to try to keep on making an appointment, and you should get one maybe 2 weeks, before your trip. Well, 3 days before your trip, then you could make it. But in the next 2 weeks, it's very, very difficult.
So we're talking really last minute, hold your breath. You may or may not make it. So here's the big question. When is this going to end? When does this get better? Do we have to wait until Labor Day?
So I agree with you. I think you're right, because I think this is a combination of the of milking the pandemic, and also a combination of the summer rush, which is always, no matter how you twist it, and I'm working on a legacy, which I'll tell you about one day. But at the end of the day, I believe it's a summer rush as well, coupled with the milking of a pandemic. There's really no reason, in my opinion, why the passport agency has to be empty upstairs with maybe 10 people while people are outside crying and literally crying for an appointment, desperate. They're losing hundreds of dollars, fortunes, rescheduling trips, lost trips, non-refundable. Peter, it's really heartbreaking. I'm seeing something I've never seen before. This is 2021, and I have not seen this before. This is something that you saw when cars were all black, when you went outside the street and you saw them driving.
Well, here's the other question then, and that is this. We know that, in the service industry, especially hospitality, they're having staffing issues, whether it's pilots at American Airlines or people to wait tables at restaurants or to man security, gates at airports. People aren't coming back to work. But what's the story with the State Department? I mean, are you telling me that people are just staying home and not working?
I have a funny feeling, which is what I just can't get, because this is the load of passports. They were doing passports for a while back in April of this year. I was getting them back in a week to 10 days, the expedites. They weren't so busy. All of a sudden, they hit a backlog. But I'm thinking that the people at the agencies are actually being sent bulk mail to do. So rather than tending to the window and tending to the people downstairs, they're trying to get rid of the mail that they got backed up. And so each agency is maybe doing mail, because I can't imagine that in a very secluded agency. Understand, these people don't have to work next to each other. All the agencies are guarded by windows. Before COVID, they were guarded by glass windows, so you couldn't hurt them or touch them or reach them. So certainly you're protected. I'm not understanding what is going on with one or two people manning a dozen windows in each agency, and maybe each agency having about maybe 50 appointments a day. I don't understand what they're doing. I can't imagine that they're not working. I believe that they're all there, but maybe they're doing mail.
My thanks to David. And since many of you may be stuck in the U.S. this summer, and maybe even longer, then you might be traveling within America. All the more reason to pay attention to the annual U.S. News & World Report annual list of the best places to live. Devin Thorsby reports on the winners. Every year, I actually look out for this because it speaks to all of my fantasies. And it also speaks to the fact that last year and this year, more than ever, Americans moved. They had an opportunity during the pandemic to reassess their life, to reassess their lifestyle, and to reassess their location. And so many Americans literally picked up and said, you know, we've never had a better opportunity than now. Maybe that they didn't expect, right? Beware the law of unintended consequences. Let's go somewhere. So what U.S. News & World Report does every year speaks right to that. And this year, they've just released their 2021-2022 Best Places to Live. And joining me right now, the editor for real estate for U.S. News, and that's Devin Thorsby. Hey, Devin.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. So you speak to my fantasies here. You know, I saw some of the results, which didn't surprise me. You know, Boulder, Colorado, you know, it's still doing very, very well on your list. Portland, Maine, cracked the top 25. And then, you know, Naples, Florida, Sarasota, Florida, a lot of people moving down to Florida. But what were the rankings based on? What were the metrics you used?
Yes, U.S. News looks at the details people find most important when considering a move to a new part of the country. And so to calculate the best places to live rankings, we examine kind of the data that those details really are shown through in. So we look at the cost of living and how it compares to the local area's median household income, the job market, the desirability of the place, as well as net migration and whether people are actually acting on that desire to move, as well as quality of life details, including crime rates, access to quality health care, the quality of the schools for children, and more.
And, you know, while Naples and Sarasota and Florida did well, one of the big surprises that I saw, San Diego dropped 52 spots on your list due to average monthly unemployment. And of course, I'm assuming cost of living as well.
Yes, absolutely. San Diego in particular was one of those metro areas, like a few others, that was deeply impacted in particular by the COVID-19 pandemic. Unemployment rates took a big hit. And I think because San Diego is a popular destination for a lot of people going on vacation in 2020, when people were not going on vacation, you saw a lot of the unemployment go up there just because people were not able to be employed for hospitality or tourism purposes. And so San Diego is one example of that. Las Vegas is another. It dropped 50 spots as well on the list.
And then one that also fell about 42 spots, which if you put it in the proper context, it makes sense, is a very popular travel destination, but maybe not a place that's going to be the most livable, and that was Honolulu.
Yes, a similar reaction there. The tourism industry is so huge in Honolulu. When it could not be active and accepting new people all the time throughout the pandemic, it definitely took a big hit. But, you know, since the end of 2020, as we're kind of, at least hopefully, kind of coming out of this pandemic, we're seeing that tourism bounce back. And so I think that that's an example of what we're hoping to see for next year, which is that these metro areas that took a huge hit fell really far in the rankings for this year. Hopefully next year we'll see them at least with some significance come back up a little bit. We want to see them bounce back. I don't want the road to recovery to be too long for them.
And then, of course, the other metric that we talked about was basic cost of living. And in those areas, three very, very popular places that have been on your list many, many times, Austin, Texas, Colorado Springs, and Denver, they all dropped down because they got more expensive.
Yes, absolutely. They are three very popular places, and they're still extremely highly ranked. Austin is number 5, Colorado Springs number 6, and Denver's still in the top 25. But their cost of living is rising, in particular because they're seeing so much activity of people moving to the area. And that demand, they just don't have the homes available and the infrastructure to really welcome those people without also raising the cost of living at the same time.
Now, in other rankings, and this will not come as a surprise, the fastest growing places in the United States, 4 out of the 5, Florida. That's Sarasota, Fort Myers, Naples, and Lakeland, and then Myrtle Beach. the home of miniature golf for those people who want to know those things. And then the one that I think people, these are the sleepers, your list of most affordable places, Huntsville, Alabama, Fort Wayne, Indiana, the Quad Cities in Iowa and Illinois, and, Hickory, North Carolina, and back to Iowa again for Des Moines. I mean, that's the Midwest seems to be doing okay.
Yes, the Midwest is definitely, I would say, the place to go for affordable living, especially because a lot of those metro areas have worked for a long time. I know Des Moines is one in particular that really aims to attract employers and businesses, tech in particular, to try to bring more people to the area long term and take advantage of that low cost of living, especially compared to the expensive tech hubs like Boulder, Colorado, for one, you know, high home prices there, but Seattle, Silicon Valley, those places are so expensive in comparison to a place like Des Moines or the Quad Cities.
Exactly. We're talking to Devin Thorsby, the real estate editor for U.S. News and World Report. And basically speaking to what I was saying at the beginning of our segment, your survey showed that a third of Americans say that the pandemic has changed their preference to where they want to live. That's, there you go. There's your mobility index right there. 11% say they've already relocated or plan to relocate because of the pandemic. And then 7% of those said they plan to do so permanently. Of course, a lot of people who say they plan to do so just temporarily, it turns out to be permanently anyway. And then, you know, it's not surprising. So I suppose if I was investing in like moving companies, this would be the time to make that investment because they've got to be very busy.
Absolutely. Especially long distance movers, I would say, could probably take advantage of a lot of people interested in moving from one type of metro area to another. Of those that, you know, say they plan to move or have already moved as a result of the pandemic, over 57% said that they would prefer to move or have moved from a more population dense area to a less dense area. And that's certainly not everyone. We also had 25% saying they wanted to move to a more densely populated area.
Well, how about this? How about this? They want to move to, here's my thought. A lot of them would probably want to move to a previously more densely populated area, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think in New York City in particular is one example. There's references to kind of a rent surge. Rental rates are increasing pretty fast in New York City and in those kind of major urban centers. And I have to kind of put in the reminder for the people that are kind of sitting there among it, seeing and feeling it like it's a surge, that it was because rent did drop quite significantly because a lot of people left during the pandemic.
That's it. It's the ebb and flow of greedy landlords. I got it. My thanks to Devin, to David Alwadish, and to Simon Calder. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, just log on to petergreenberg.com.
Special thanks to our sponsors at Clear. Enroll in Clear at clearme.com/Peter and zip through busy airports nationwide.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.